This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to Martin Sugden, CEO of Bold & James, about how the lockdown will change adherence to compliance and how it should be viewed going forward. Martin, hello.
Morning. Nice to meet you.
Bold & James is publishing a white paper entitled Classification by Design, the Foundation of Effective Data Protection Compliance. Before we get to that, I wanted to ask you what the state of compliance regulation is across the world. Is it stabilising or is it becoming more complex?
You've got to say that it's becoming more complex. New laws are coming out all over the world. There is a sort of standardization around the sort of things that you're finding in GDPR. So a lot of similarities amongst the laws, but they are all a little bit different. Everybody does theirs a different way. And if anything, the California rules are a bit more aggressive. And of course, if you're a multinational, you have to comply with all of those rules because you're operating all of those territories.
Has COVID-19 paused or slowed down the kind of regulatory changes?
I don't think that it's affected the regulatory changes at all. In fact, a number of the ICO, for instance, and other people have basically said, we're not accepting the fact that you're having to operate under slightly different conditions as a defense. You still need to comply and you still need to be in a position to comply. It definitely has brought about significantly stronger challenges for lots of companies are having to operate in a completely different manner than they normally do.
If the state of change is not altered, what's driving that change at the moment?
For a long time, there's been a change in the way that companies operate. People talk about big data, but effectively, systems are being more open. People are moving to cloud, getting the supply chain and the customers to get involved in what they're doing. And people are using data in a way which is very powerful to drive their business. Alongside that becomes the sort of ownership of whose data is it. We've all had phone calls from people telling us we've been in car accidents and things like that that we haven't been in. There's lots of abuses of data going on. And of course, the regulators, seeing that happen, have responded by bringing in rule sets.
In terms of the regulatory change?
So the regulators are trying to protect individuals, and EU GDPR, for instance, effectively says that you might, as a company, have my information, but it's not your information just because you've written it down. It remains my information and I still have control over what you can and what you can't do with it. That is a completely different state of mind as to where we were from a pure marketing perspective, say, 3 to 5 years ago.
You're almost saying that the phrase data is the new oil, but we need people to make sure they're using clean oil and for the right purposes, one assumes, is an analogy.
Most people are pretty clear who owns the oil at any point. If it's in the ground, if it's in a pump, if it's in your car, when you've paid for it, what you can do with it and what you can't do with it. When people start taking oil from your pipeline and using it in a different way, people get a bit irritated. The concept here is that data used to be considered, for instance, if you met somebody at a show and they gave you their business card, effectively, your view was that you could mail them with anything and everything that you felt you wanted to, with no concern for whether they wanted to receive it or not. These regulations are designed to stop that type of activity. If I give you my name and address, so for instance, you can send me a rates bill or you can put me on your list at the local dentist, that doesn't mean to say you can sell my name and address to somebody else who might be wanting to market Coca-Cola or Macintoshes or things of that nature.
Does the lockdown provide a greater threat or is it also an opportunity for compliance teams at the moment?
It certainly provides a greater threat. If you look at the sorts of things we are trying to control here, it's personal private information. For instance, I might talk to my staff and one of them at the moment will be telling me that they've got COVID, that one of their families got COVID, that they may be having to attend a funeral. Personal information that you simply do not want to be moving around an organization without control. It's personal to those people. But of course, we're now doing it across email. We're doing it maybe on Zoom calls, etc., potentially with other people on those calls. So it's very difficult to protect that sort of information. If you turn around the other way and go, well, what about standard corporate information? If I want to get it from you, if I want to, say, attack you by spear phishing or, getting you to click on emails, etc., the fact that you're working from home, away from the mothership and away from help, clearly the chances of you making that mistake, and if you're not trained and you're not aware of what's going on, and that you're using new tools, is significantly greater than it would have been in your normal working environment.
With people working from home, as you said, they're kind of outside the mothership. But does that mean, in a sense, they're outside control as well of the IT organization? Is that a problem at the moment?
Yeah, it is, because a lot of the tools they're using are completely unresearched, if you like, as far as the organization is concerned. We're all downloading Zoom and starting to using it with our friends. And of course, if you've got it on your computer, you then might use that for business work, etc. The standard rules and processes that the organization would put in place for the tools that it has signed off to use have to a large extent gone by the wayside, because they've had to roll out untested and untried equipment really quickly. There hasn't really been the time for privacy by design, which I think is one of the critical things behind things like EU GDPR. You know, you're supposed to think about these things in advance. Well, we just haven't had time for that.
If you are meant to think of those things in advance, it sounds like you're talking about the horse is bolted and all we're doing now is closing the stable door. So how can companies regain control?
The first thing you need to understand is data exists and is created every day. It isn't quite the horse has bolted. There are a lot of horses and a lot of them are still in the stable. Yes, some data will have leaked all of the time. How do you get your processes and procedures in place? To my mind, the first thing you must do is understand what you've got, where it is, who's got access to it, and put some sort of level of control on that information, which for me is you have to classify every piece of information you've got. Not to say whether it's secret or important, but to say, what is it? You need to classify it to say, you know, is this a patient record that I've got stored here? Whatever the business taxonomy is for the sorts of things you do on a day-to-day basis, you know, is this a customer order? Is this a customer record? Something like that that gives you an ability to make decisions on the fly and your other security tools to make decisions on the fly about whether people can access that data, whether people can share that data. If you don't have any knowledge about what you've got, and where it is, it's really, really difficult to respond to this changing environment.
When you're talking about data classification, what exactly do you mean by that? Because there are different types of data.
There are lots of different types of data. The sort of thing I'm mainly talking about here is the unstructured stuff, so email, Excel, PowerPoint, the office documents, those sorts of things, things that we create on a regular basis. It is likely that as a company, if you're, say, putting things directly into, say, an Adobe form that's going straight into a secure system, that you already know what that is and you already have adequate controls over the access to some of those. But what's happening at the moment is we're communicating in that unstructured way, creating information, and really the only person who understands what's in that file when they create it is the person who created it. So getting a data classification, a label on that document right at its outset so that it can be protected and managed throughout its lifestyle, I think is critical to really nailing down the sorts of problems we're talking about here. Because the vast majority of data loss that we hear about is people stealing things. But at least half of data loss is people just making mistakes, sending things to the wrong person. You know, we've all sent emails to friends of ours when we thought we were sending them to work colleagues. Auto-suggest is an absolute nightmare.
What you're talking about is text data, but you've already mentioned it, and we spoke about before this conversation started around things like companies using Zoom, video, podcasts. They're having conversations, and those conversations and Zoom videos are being recorded. Can that video and voice data be classified as well?
It can be classified, but I think in practice, you're looking here to be saying, what are my business rules? What are my business processes? Whoever is controlling that Zoom meeting, for instance, ought to be cognizant of the information that's going to be talked about in that meeting. And you need to make sure that people are aware and trained of the sorts of things that they should be doing on those things. Because let's face it, a lot of these things are recorded. They'll come back and bite you in posterity in the future. A lot of times you've got maybe hundreds of people on, say, a Zoom call. Off-guarded comments that people generally might use in a meeting when they're sitting face-to-face with the three or four people that they know, those things can be dynamite in an organization. Now, you can cause lots and lots of inter-department strife by somebody, you know, slagging off the purchasing department or calling the accountants the order prevention people because they forget the accounts team are sitting there quietly, as they often do on the call. There are processes and procedures that people need to grasp and understand. That's a training issue. And yeah, occasionally you can have calls where you're saying, look, some of the stuff we do in businesses is national secret. So there are rules as to what you can and what you can't say. And people will make sure people are aware of that before they commence.
You mentioned a few aspects of compliance strategy there, but what are the aspects that you feel are important?
Compliance is a really powerful tool for an organization, but compliance itself is not really the end date. What you should be doing as a business is saying, what's going to make my business work more effectively? How am I going to demonstrate that I'm doing these things correctly? And therefore, I'm in a position whereby not only am I spending money on things that are valuable to my business, so my classification schema needs to be about the things that are important to my business. So it's a taxonomy that I use. We're calling it patient records. We're calling it invoices. We're calling it things that everybody understands and everybody knows, rather than saying this is secret or confidential. The ability then to monitor that, manage that, and control that allows you to be in a position whereby you can meet your compliance requirements, which can be quite onerous, without effectively changing the way you run your business processes. So you need to make it work for you rather than the other way around. Often security is seen as a grudge purchase because why do we need burglar alarms? Well, we need burglar alarms because somebody might steal something. It's not really adding any value to your house. It's not something you would buy if burglary didn't exist. From my perspective, being able to demonstrate compliance and be able to do it in an effective way is the sign of a well-run business. It's not the thing that we're aiming to do in the first place.
If you exclude financial services, which I think are pretty hot on compliance in most cases, my experience is compliance tends to fall down the budgetary priority level. And especially at the moment with COVID-19, companies are struggling. Why should they spend money on compliance when they might want to start continue paying staff or doing other investments to survive?
Totally agree that compliance is not something that is right at the top of the mind in a number of businesses at the moment. You can see from the stats that come out that less than 50% of companies have actually fully fronted up to this sort of process. Banking clearly is high on that list. Pharmaceutical, a lot of manufacturing where they've got strong intellectual property requirements, etc., have also grasped the nettle. But again, if you go back to this point of you can't run your business, the reputational damage of not complying with these types of laws, the impact on your business, I mean, the fines are quite important, but it's really the reputational damage that's done from being shown to not look after people's data can be very, very significant. So businesses across the whole of the environment have got to be prepared for this. The other thing you've got to be interested in here as well is quite often, small businesses that aren't taking notice of things, they are hacked, but they're not the target. What people are trying to do is say your local gym, for instance, they're trying to find out who you are and what passwords you use at your local gym so that they can break into your company and then see if you're using the same passwords. So there's a bit of a symbiosis here of companies having to front up to the fact that if you don't have proper data security in place, you're a weak link, and sooner or later that's going to come back and bite you.
That's an interesting thing you say there, because normally most people talk about third-party risk, but you're almost talking about third-party risk at arm's length. You're actually talking around the employee supply chain almost. How can organizations cope with that? Is there a way they can cope with it, or is that just a general education across the public?
I think it's a general education of their employees. So companies have got to take responsibility for their own positioning here, which is where, from my perspective, classification and getting all of your user community involved in understanding what they're doing, putting labels on things, dealing with data in a controlled way, makes them aware of what the security issues are. There is no possibility of 100% stoppage. This is about minimizing the risks. This is about making your organization materially more difficult to attack than other organizations. So you go back to the burglar alarm. If you've got a burglar alarm on the outside of your house and your neighbor doesn't, they'll go and rob your neighbor first. This is about let's build a front-end process on our system where our staff understand what we're doing, our supply chain understand what we're doing. We've got a set of processes and a set of rules about information labeling and handling. We push those things through solidly. And as a result, we put ourselves in a much healthier position. And it's not going to cost us a lot of money because the improvements to our business processes from the smoothing process that we create through this is actually going to pay off. We are going to be a better company for having controls, ability to get rid of data that we don't need, not store massive amounts of data that we're just storing because we're frightened of what's in it, and all the operational benefits that come from having people understanding what they're doing, not keeping copies and that sort of stuff.
If I do decide actually I need to look at compliance, what's the investment profile like? Is it a big CapEx cost or is it more OpEx and continuous cost?
There's definitely a continuous cost of things like GDPR, being able to deal with your customers, for instance, asking you what data do you have, where is it, how are you dealing with it, processing, etc. So there is an ongoing cost that businesses are going to have to suck up with this. It's just a cost of doing business. Really depends upon how you buy a lot of these tools. There are a lot of managed services out there, so people can take them as OPEX if they want to. Is it expensive? I wouldn't say it's cheap. The reality of the problem is that what a lot of companies have done is they've gone for a sort of one-size-fits-all platform approach. And what they're finding is that whilst it said it was cheap, and you know, when a friend once said to me, sometimes buying the cheapest thing is often the most expensive way of running your business. What you really need to do is decide what's really important and make sure you get the right tools for that job, and then merge those with other things that are less important. If you start at the wrong place, you have a really simplified classification structure that really doesn't do an awful lot. Yes, you've ticked a box and you've signed your compliance list, but actually all you've done is waste your money. You haven't got any value from it. You haven't improved your user positioning. This is really all about finding the right tools to do the right things. And it will be different for every company because, like you say, banks have got a lot more private data and they're under attack in particular ways. Shipbuilders, I imagine, is a completely different environment. Horses for courses is my view of where you should be here, not just, as we've seen a lot of people, certainly in the middle range, just taking a platform because they can then move on to their next problem. All that happens is it comes back and bites them.
You said it's not cheap. Is there a business case you can put together? Do people need to look at an ROI, or is it more of a risk-based business case?
You definitely can look at an ROI. There's lots of savings that can be made around data storage, data management, etc. It's really difficult to put into any sort of ROI. The fact you might get fined, those things are really difficult to do. There is a risk there, and some of the fines that have come out so far are huge, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds for some of the big companies, MBA, for instance. But the reality of the situation is, I believe if you look at classification and you look at what that helps with your front-end discovery and how you then run your business, the costs of actually that end of it are relatively small, and the business benefits are demonstrable and very clear. Also helps you make better decisions about which of the other tools that you wish to bring in, what sort of remediation you might want to do. Those tools can be extraordinarily expensive to deploy in your business because they change your business processes. When you start using encryption, for instance, that can have a real burden on how your business operates.
Taking encryption, can you not do that in an automated way if your data classification is there in the first place?
Yeah, you can. But what does it mean? You have to make a decision to encrypt certain data. It might well be that what you take a decision that says certain things of a certain level need to be stored encrypted all of the time. But then that means that when anybody needs to access it, they have to decrypt it. If you put in post-delivery controls about, well, when I send this information out to my supply chain, can they print it? Can they change it? Can they do all those things? All those things are business process changes. All of them are right for various pieces of information. But if you just say, well, let's do that for everything, it slows down your business process. It makes it more difficult. And in fact, the things that you have to deploy throughout your supply chain and with all of your users tend to be expensive. You have to remember there are a significant number of false positives with a large number of these automated tools. You've only got to look at Spellchecker. Is anybody going to 100% rely on Spellchecker? It's been out there a long time. By now it should be perfect and it isn't. Yeah, that's an automated tool. Yeah, that's artificial intelligence telling you that what you've just written is right, and we all know it isn't. So the reality of the situation is you have to have, if you lock everything down based upon the result of an automated process, sooner or later you're going to get a quarantine of all sorts of things that your management team will look at it and go, well, there's nothing wrong with that stuff. Why did you stop it in the first place? And what often happens is corporates then start to take the rule sets down so that they don't get the false positives, which actually means you're actually taking the security away. To my mind, it's much better to start with that user community, train them to an appropriate level, trust what they're doing, and then you end up using encryption, for instance, or post-delivery controls for a much smaller part of your tool set. And that way your businesses are much better run, much more open and able to grow, able to respond environment.
See, you've spoken about security, education, processes, data classification. Is there any one that's more important, or should you start with one of those, or is it a completely blended approach?
if you look at a Gartner or a Forrester or the main, the guys who really have sat back and thought about this, they basically say the first thing you should do is sit down with a piece of paper and think about what you've got and where it is, what's happening in your business, where processes are going, where information is being stored, etc. Then define what your classification process should be, get that policy in place, and then go and start to look at your data stores, apply your classification historically, because obviously people have got, you know, years and years of data that's just sitting there that they're not really able to do a lot with. Basically go through that process, and then when you fully understand what you've got and your classification is up and running, you start to layer on top of that the other tool sets that are out there, so like a data loss prevention or encryption or digital rights management, etc. Access control, clearly quite important. For my mind, the problem obviously is that most companies aren't starting out from scratch. They've all got a lot of things out there. They've deployed some things. They've got some stuff in place. It's difficult for most companies to take that approach. But that is without doubt the right way forward.
If you were to give a tip to a compliance lead or CEO around this subject, what would it be?
First thing you've got to do is make sure that you know what you've got, where it is, and how it's being used. If you don't know that, then you need to find that out, because you can't really move forward until you have a clear understanding of what people are doing with your data. We found all sorts of examples of, one of our discovery partners was telling us the other day, they found lots and lots and lots of videos. A lot of their storage was actually because the guys used to share videos, and a lot of their storage was actually copies of these videos that they shared, because nothing was ever gotten rid of. Nothing to do with the business at all, but until somebody looked and went, well, what is that? You know, they couldn't make sensible decisions. There's a process of somebody has to sort of sit and think about what you've got, build that classification model based upon the business taxonomy. So it's 2-3 levels of, you know, it's a patient record, where can it go, that sort of thing. It's not one label or not something that's indiscriminate like secret, which could be anything. You need to have much more detail than that around that process, and then you can start to manage and control your data. You can start to get ahead of the problem. And if compliance rules do change, and if another law comes in, or if you have to start dealing with things in a different way, because you've got detail at that granular level around the individual files, you can start to change your processes to meet those requirements. If you don't know anything, if it's just a big amorphous blob, you can't do that.
One of the challenges I see, therefore, is the complexity of classification, because although a lot of the data protection regulations coming in are similar and in many cases based on GDPR, there are some nuances which make them significantly different from each other. So how do you ensure that the classification aligns with the current differences and potentially future differences?
It's really quite simple in most cases, because 90% of people in a company do the same sorts of things in their day job. They will actually only be applying 2 or 3 labels of a different type, and that label might have 3 pieces to it. In a standard tool like ours, you can have favorites. So let's say you have 2 favorites. One is, this is my day job, and the other one is, this is when I act up for my boss when he doesn't work on a Friday afternoon. Basically, you've got 2 favorites. You can single click on your favorite, and it'll put the 3 or 4 labels that you need to put on the things that you do. It's only when you're doing something unusual, or when you're higher up the organization and you're doing things that are varied on a regular basis, or you're in M&A, or if you're in HR, for instance, and you're dealing with this, those people understand what they're doing. They understand the complexity of what they're dealing with. They understand the secrecy around the data. They understand whether something needs to be locked down or whether it needs to be shared with broader groups of people. There's lots of tool sets in our tool sets as well that will help you. Let's say this is your first time working in this particular area. We can help you get to the right label. We have decision trees. In reality, whilst I understand entirely that there might be a lot of complexity across a whole multinational, for most of the individuals, it's extremely simple, straightforward, and based upon their day job, which doesn't vary that dramatically on a day-to-day basis. So it simply just isn't that difficult.
But data sovereignty regulations vary by jurisdiction. For example, I now need to record that an individual is based in California rather than the wider US. Or if they're a Russian living in Russia, the personal data needs to be stored in Russia. Is that a facet of the data, or is it a function of the data classification?
It could be a classification or a facet. One of the principal areas where that works is in export control and in ITAR, so International Trade in Arms. it is quite reasonable to share data between certain groups of people. One of our major customers, an American business, gets a lot of things from the American government and gets a lot of things from UK government and other things from other governments around the world. Those things can only be shared with, say, a US national for a US national. Now, that might sound easy because obviously the Americans are all working in America, but they're not. And in fact, a lot of the Americans are actually people who've immigrated. You might have a French national working in an American site. So clearly, the classification has to say US nationals only. The access control tool then goes and checks, in this case, Active Directory, and says, what's your nationality? And if it says you're French, then you can't go in that place or you can't open that data. You can do it either way. You can either label the document with an identifier that they then go and check nationality, or you can label nationality. In the example you've given, you'd be labeling it all as Russian. You'd be labeling it all in that way because you couldn't store that data in, say, the Irish data center of Microsoft, for instance, without some other approval, if it was Russian or if it was Californian.
Martin, thank you very much.
Thank you.